And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, there's been a lot happening this week, and I want to start with something that's happened in your neck of the woods with the Abington Democrats. Abington's a suburb of Scranton. And Scranton is, you know, by reputation, the working-class Democratic community. What's happening there? What happened with the Abington Democrats? You were there.
Yes. Well, the Abington Democrats, they've been organized now for a number of election cycles. The Abingtons, not to be confused with the Abington area outside of Philadelphia, but the Abingtons are the northwest suburbs of the city of Scranton in Lackawanna County. And there's a number of municipalities. Most of them are under the Clark Summit zip code. Clark Summit, Clark's Green, South Abington Township, West Abington, North Abington, Newton, Ransom, Dalton, Waverly, Glenburn, and this whole area.
Sounds like you've got more towns than people.
Well, the thing is, the towns are not a lot of people. And some of them, like Newton and Ransom, are holding on to the Republican base that the Clark Summit and Clark Green used to be and are no longer. But a number of years ago, led by a group of women, there was a organization. Actually, it was during the 2016 election. To get people, A, registered, and B, out to vote. And the Abingtons have been very successful in getting a much higher Democratic proportion of votes than the rest of the county. Because they've organized, they've done door-to-door, they've gotten people interested and getting them off their duff, so to speak. More recently, they've been holding meetings, and they've had speakers and politicians come to these meetings, and have been drawing large crowds. This week, they had another meeting. They invited the four state reps from Lackawanna County and the Democratic County Commissioner, Bill Gaughan, to what effectively became a town hall. They had to use a bigger venue. They had 150 chairs set up, and they were virtually all filled, and there were people standing around the outside. And it was a legitimate town hall, not one of these phony town halls that the Republicans have been holding, where they're on Zoom, and there's questions that have to be submitted in advance and are edited and chosen and picked, rather than spontaneously brought up. And they were willing, all of these state reps and the county commissioner were willing to meet things head on. One of the things that the county commissioner came out and talked about was the way that the Democrats have been losing voters in registration. The Republicans have been gaining that, and saying that this must stop. And this is, he has been saying this now since his election, and of course he had a partner at that time, McGloin, who suddenly resigned a couple months ago. So he's out there alone in the county doing this. But the state reps are also united in the fact that they find that they're swimming upstream against the county Democratic chairman, who is not organizing and is not really doing anything, and has a view of the party that was really a 1950s view. And that is that we've got to get jobs for our friends and families first and foremost. And this is what people have been rebelling about. They want the government to do things for them, not just for the in few. So it was a lively meeting, and it was explained that the only way that the Abington Group, which is constrained by state party regulations, and its sort of affiliation with the county in a loose way, that the only way things can change is the next cycle of elections for committee people. They have to get people to run, and they have to get people elected who are not beholden to the county chairman, who are independent of him and want to be what true Democrats are, and that is for the majority of the people, doing things for them. And it's going to be an uphill battle. One of the things that was noted was that there were very few young people there. When the county commissioner asked how many people here are in that age demographic, 18 to 24, you know, they break things up politically, 18 to 24 and 24 to 40 and, what have you. There was only one person under 25 that raised their hand. And she was very lively. And she said she's willing to work and she wants to do things. For instance, there's no discernible activity on the university campuses. There are really five colleges that could be worked on, mostly the University of Scranton, which used to be a hotbed of Democratic politics, Marywood, Keystone to some extent, which is on the border of Lackawanna, and Lackawanna College, and there's a Penn State campus. My wife recalls back in 2016, she was trying to register voters at Penn State, and she'd stand outside and ask kids as they went by, and they didn't even want to register to vote. And she couldn't get them excited. They need to have people holding rallies there and getting kids. That's kind of what's been happening. A rally 2 weeks ago on Courthouse Square that was organized, the Abington Dems were the ones that had the most people there. They had signs printed up from the Abington Dems, "Democracy is not for sale," and "Hands off." That was the theme, "Hands off our Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security." And, people know what we're doing up here. But it's got to spread. It's got to be better organized.
The officials stand in the way of that, right?
Well, the party chair and his group and the state senator, Marty Flynn, are on one side, and the state reps and the county commissioner on the other side.
There's no policy dispute here, right? They're not. My guess is that, at least I heard that the person that they wanted, that the state, that the county chairman wants to have replace McGoin, who resigned as the county commissioner, is someone who'll go along with the MAGA people.
Yeah, they want to do what's been done in a couple of counties. Montgomery County, notably, a few years ago, is that a Democrat and a Republican get together and cut out the other Democrat. That's what they want to do. And of course,
why do they want to do that?
It goes to hiring. It goes to jobs and where the money gets allocated for the county. Type of thing. Remember, the old guys that were in left the county with a huge deficit that required a 33% increase in the county tax rate because there was a structural deficit and a lot of bills were kind of hidden under the table, so to speak. And when McGloin and Gaughan came in, they exposed all of this.
But apart from everything else, does the Democratic organizational leadership in Lackawanna County grasp that there's a nationwide struggle for the soul of America, as Biden used to say, a struggle for how America society is going to be organized, led, what it's going to strive for, what it's going to be like? Or they don't read the papers? They don't read the papers.
No. I mean, it all centers around the ego of the the county chairman, and it all stops at the edge of the Lackawanna-Luzerne border, so to speak.
And what you're describing is what happened in Luzerne County, right?
Yeah. State Representative Haddock, who is in both, his district is both counties. It's almost an even 50-50 split, although he says his part of Luzerne County is the Democratic part of Luzerne County, Pittston City, et cetera. He said he was watching this happen years ago in Luzerne County, and the leadership didn't want to give up control and was doing nothing to stop it. And as a result, at one time it was a huge voter registration advantage in Luzerne County, and now Luzerne County has a plurality of Republicans, because independents are there too. People have just left the Democratic Party. Of course, Luzerne County had a particular set of corruption issues. In Lackawanna County, the corruption was the Republicans. It was the Bobby Cordero, Mike Munchak administration that went to jail. That hasn't deterred the Republicans from still continuing. And they are getting help from outside. There's no doubt that the MAGA people, because there's some personal relationship that goes on with Donald Trump Jr., for instance, and some of the Republicans here. They're working at it, and the Democrats are not. Democrats are not. Although the Republicans still have a problem fielding candidates. They couldn't field a candidate for sheriff this year, for district attorney, for register of wills.
But they turned out to vote for Garrity.
They turned out to vote for Stacey Garrity. And that's going to be interesting. She comes from Bradford County, which is not a huge county, not a big political base. But she got more votes in this last election than anybody in the history of the state of Pennsylvania. And that includes Josh Shapiro.
And she is a MAGA Republican.
The MAGA Republican, and the Republicans are going to go all out.
And not only a MAGA, but a Christian nationalist MAGA.
Nationalist, right. And the Republicans are going to go all out in 2026 to defeat Josh Shapiro, or at least to wound him, because they don't want him on the ticket in 2028. The Republican problem is, though, that they've got a split now. Dan Huser, who is your congressman, wants to run for governor.
And was the first public official in Pennsylvania to endorse Trump in his second in this last election.
Yeah, and he's trying to out MAGA Garrity, and she's more subtle about what she's doing. She's trying a softer approach. He's out there, and of course, this week he ran into trouble because when the governor's mansion was firebombed while the governor and his family were sleeping, Muser came out with a statement that essentially blamed not the perpetrator, but the governor, and he had to walk it back. And there's a third factor, Mastriano, who was defeated by Shapiro quite handily a couple of years ago, thinks he wants to run again. Doug Mastriano, he could be a factor in siphoning votes off one of the two people, but he won't. I think what he's hoping is he can sneak through that they offset each other. We'll have to see when push comes to shove what's going to happen there.
But looking at it broadly, you have a situation where the entrenched leadership of the Democratic Party on a county basis seems to be oblivious to the actual politics of the country and is interested only in its personal graft. That's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah. that's basically it. And
how can an organization like that imagine that they could lead the struggle nationwide against MAGA? It's inconceivable.
They can't. The Abington Dems model is what they need to follow, but they don't have the horses in place because the county chairman hasn't put them in place. And there's been no grassroots rising in other areas, at least not that I'm aware of.
So this brings to mind an article that I called to your attention the other day by David Brooks, a rock-ribbed conservative who grew up an acolyte, a protege of William Buckley, the National Review founder, and who has been in that stream of political thought all his adult life, who wrote an important article in the New York Times published this last week, in which he calls for a united front against MAGA, which he said has to be led by a single organization, but that encompasses every stream of opposition, whether it's from the legal community, whether it's the university community, scientists, working people, everybody, he says, because the entire social structure of America is what's in question right now. And he says, I am not a movement guy. I don't like to go to demonstrations except as a reporter. But he begins his essay with a quote from the first historian in human civilization, Thucydides, who quoted an Athenian to the effect of the rich, the powerful do what they can and the weak endure what they must. That's how he starts his essay. And he ends it with an allusion to Karl Marx's famous ending in the Communist Manifesto. And he says, he points in this paragraph, his concluding paragraph, he says, the Trump administration wishes to enslave and enchain the American people. And he says, we have to unite because we have nothing to lose but our chains. It's a remarkable article. I don't think that he grasps what's involved, how difficult it is to organize the kind of united front that he envisions. But the fact that he comes to that conclusion beyond what the anti-Trump Republicans, you know, tried to organize coming into the 2024 election, to me, that represents a watershed mark in mainstream political thinking. Not that he can lead it, not that they can lead it, but that they're open to participating in a mass campaign against MAGA. That's something.
Yeah, except I think his vision of who would be the leaders of that is, he's still of the elitist view.
Oh, I agree with you. But yeah. Look at where he's coming from. Look at how far he's traveled.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and being pushed into that. That area. I don't think he came to it, with a lot of initial enthusiasm, but
he came to it kicking and screaming against it.
Yeah.
That's why it's so remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. But he realizes that we're in somewhat of a crisis. You know, this idea of coalescing is important, but you still need some leader to do it. I mean, we've seen what Bernie and AOC have been doing, going out into the red areas. They've gone to Utah, they've gone to Montana, they're drawing huge crowds. And it was interesting back in 2016, the Bernie bros and the Trumpsters were not that far apart. There was a Venn diagram would have a pretty large overlap between the people. The thing was that both...
Well, they're not far apart in what they were pointing to as faults in American society. They were at opposite ends of the spectrum of how to solve that those problems.
Right, right. And that was the thing. And
by the way, that's the case with fascists. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you do remember that Hitler's organization was called the National German Socialist Workers' Party. Socialist Workers' Party. Because the point of the fascists is if they can't figure out a way to fool the working class to get a portion of them to be part of their base, they can't win.
Yeah, that's they're good. And Trump is really good at identifying things that people care about or people worry about or that need addressing. The thing is, he always does, his solutions are always the wrong ones.
Well, they're the corporate solution. They're the corporate solution. They're the solutions exactly against the interests of the working people of the country. Right.
Right. Right. And that's that's continued. So
look at the business with tariffs. Only an imbecile could continue to maintain that tariffs are not a tax on consumption. It's obvious. And if it wouldn't be obvious at the beginning, this week, the Ford Motor Company sent out a letter to all the Ford dealers saying prices were going up because of tariffs. They didn't mince words. Prices are going up because of tariffs. Who's going to pay those prices? The people buying Ford motor cars.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The Trumpsters, the MAGA people, the people that he has are all the people who believe in the blarney, so to speak, and they're the ones that are only going to screw things up. I mean, they're really the second rate, but unfortunately, they have the power right now, and we've seen them make mistakes over and over and over again. We had the signal gate because they couldn't figure out that they were on a non-secured network, and they invited someone in that they shouldn't have. They made the mistakes on the deportation of that one Maryland fellow that was in the country illegally. They made mistakes with with the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, where they cut people and realized that, wait a minute, we have to have someone who knows how to control our nuclear weapons.
They arrested, I don't know if you noticed that this week they arrested a guy in Florida, born in Georgia, not the state of Georgia, the country of Georgia, but the state of Georgia, living in Georgia, just driving to work with a group of other people. They arrested him for being an undocumented immigrant. He says, but I was born 30 miles from here. They brought him to court. His wife showed up, or his mother showed up with his birth certificate. And the judge says, yes, this is an authentic birth certificate. This guy is a native-born American. He should not be held. But ICE said, no, they wanted to detain him. And they did detain him. And there was a danger that he would be immediately shipped down to Louisiana, as happened to the Turkish student in New England.
Right.
But why the judge agreed to the detainer, the ICE detainer, I really don't understand, because it was her discretion to ignore it if she wanted to, but she didn't. But the guy did get released. His lawyers jumped into court, got some kind of restraint, and finally got him released. But why should he have been arrested? Why should ICE have had the authority to be able to say, even though the judge said, no, this guy was born in America, why did they have the right to keep him in jail anyway? But they did, or at least they had the power.
Yeah, and that's the thing that Americans are starting to, there's been a subtle shift Trump has been on message. Remember I say repetition, 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 ever since he came down that golden escalator, about that America's problems are the immigrants. And he's got a huge percentage of MAGA that's all they care about, is getting immigrants out of the country, or people who look like immigrants, people who aren't white Christian, particularly white Christian males. He's got that base. But other people are starting to see the effects of this and the ugliness of this. And as you just pointed out, the mistakes in carrying this policy out. And it's getting less and less popular. And the fact that Trump even said that he thinks that they could take American citizens and ship them out of the country without due process.
Which I think this Florida example was a probe in that direction to see what would happen.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That starts to sit uneasy in the larger numbers of people. Normally they wouldn't care about some Hispanic guy who has tattoos, but they do start to care about the fact that the court orders were not being followed. And unfortunately, the court orders are the last things that the last line of defense, and it's become a very thin line of defense, because Republicans in Congress are really doing nothing.
Well, and then don't forget, you've got judges who are prepared to twist the law into what it was never intended to be and to give Trump the right to do and the MAGA people the right to do and claim it's legal.
Well, you had just
court orders may go against the people.
Yeah, well, you had Judge Wilkinson, a Reagan appointee this week on the Fourth Circuit, issue a very strongly worded opinion saying that, in essence, this is against everything the Constitution stands for, the policies of the Trump administration. And, you know, we've had Judge Luttig, since the 2020 election coming out, another highly respected Republican conservative. Unfortunately, what these guys don't understand is that that brand of Republicanism, and David Brooks doesn't understand, that's the part that's been, if I can use the word, emasculated from the Republican Party.
Purged. The energy, how about purged?
Purged. 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 Yeah, purged is the right thing. And over time, I think history will record their statements or the opinion of Judge Wilkinson as being fit and proper. But in the meantime, there could be a lot of damage done.
I think you're right. I think it's without question that the leadership comes from the left wing of the Democratic coalition. That's where it comes from. That's where it came from in the 30s. That's how we got Social Security. Those are the people who have a vision of a different life, demand it, and somehow through compromise and coalition, something emerges in that direction. When you say the arc of history bends toward justice, that's the process. That's how it works. And along those lines, people have to, and Democrats especially, have to realize that they can't go along with condemning immigration and immigrants. If not for immigration, we would not have a solvent Social Security system. There would be no Social Security, and it's going to get worse as the years go by. Without immigration, we're going to be like the Japanese society. Not enough workers, not enough people to run the country, to run the economy of the country. We need to defend immigrants and immigration and not be MAGA light.
But they have to do it in a manner that is acceptable to the American people.
Yeah, but the first thing you have to do is remove the stigma. The right wing has been successful in producing a stigma on immigration and on immigrants. Legal, illegal, what doesn't matter. Immigration is regarded as something bad here in this nation of immigrants.
The problem is the loop that the MAGA people see on the Fox television and Newsmax, where you show crowds of people, you know, running through fences and what have you. That is not the kind of immigration that people want. And you have to understand that even in the Hispanic community, and it happened in Texas, where the Hispanics voted against the Democrats because they say, we've come here legally, or we've come here through a right process, and these folks haven't, and it's not right.
Yeah, but why do those people say that? Because there was 10 years of propaganda that said, oh, there's a legal way to do it and an illegal way to do it. Well, I don't agree with that.
They've got, don't forget, there have been bills that have been passed or that have been in Congress. Remember, the Gang of Eight, led by Marco Rubio, had a new immigration plan. And then we had last year, Senator Langford had a plan that was highly conservative on immigration policy. And the Republicans walked away from their own plans twice.
That's right, because the Republicans are against immigration. And I'd like to discuss this next week. We have no time. We're over the limit. We can't really do justice.
Certain immigration they're against.
Yeah, not the South African whites.
Yeah.
That they're for. The Musks.
The South African whites seems to be the problem, but anyway.
Yeah. See you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.